Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Stuff. Always stuff. Okay. My public service stuff. Are you ready for runoffs? It's May 22nd is the runoff for certain of the Republican and Democratic positions where they did not get at least 50% of the vote. Early voting starts May 14th and runs through May 18th. Make sure you're registered. And you guys may recall, if you've been listening, I have been, kvetching about why don't they have a ballot yet. My complaint was that, hey, the Texas Tribune knows who's running. Why doesn't the Harris County Clerk's Office have a ballot online yet? Well, I called the Harris County Clerk's Office last week and actually got moderately high up the chain of command. I won't mention the name of the person I spoke to, but I have reason to believe that he's not far below Stan Stannard. So we had a discussion. He was a little defensive because he thought I was just calling to attack him being a radio person, because I had to tell him that I was a radio person. But once he got past that and realized that all I wanted was information, I wasn't necessarily looking to castigate him on the air. So we had an interesting discussion, and he gave me some of the reasons why, like, the Texas Tribune knows who's going to be on the ballot, but Harris County doesn't yet have a ballot. I think one of the more important things he mentioned was that it's the responsibility of the parties to officially, in other words, the county can't just look at the results and go a couple of days later, okay, we know who's going to be on the ballot. Let's make up a sample ballot. They have to wait for the parties, the Republicans, Democrats, and whomever, to give them the official report of who is going to be on their ballot, because this is a primary. It's a party primary. So that's number one. Number two, it has to be translated into several languages. But the first part is the most important. They have to get them officially from the party. There's the translation. There's apparently certain state regulations about when they should have a ballot available in respect to various kinds of elections, primaries, generals, etc. So I think the upshot of my conversation with him is nothing is as easy as it looks. And what appears to outsiders to be a very, very simple, straightforward process actually has a lot of political and legal constraints placed upon it. So I am hoping that he will eventually come on the air with me. I did invite him. We'll see. I will try to get back with him. And so that's the report in progress on why the Harris County Clerk doesn't yet have a sample ballot online. Essentially, it's not entirely their fault, and there are legal and political constraints. Okay. What seems to be a big story today is the Sinclair Network. USA Today headline, Sinclair defends itself over uproar after local news anchors read anti-quote-unquote false news screed. If you've seen the YouTube video where it shows like two or three dozen local anchors reading this thing more or less in unison, aside from the fact that I think, again, we get back to the topic of media concentration, large companies being able to spread their political agendas and corporate agendas to a large fraction of the American population, in many cases not for those people not realizing this is not really a local thing. So, for example, if you listen to the Sinclair anchors reading this thing that they had to read, their jobs were basically at stake, you are struck by the fact that you certainly get the impression that this is a local station editorial, if it's an editorial at all. I mean, I don't know that they said it's an editorial, but you think it's from the local station when actually it's been handed down from the network to, let's see, how many stations do they currently have? I have this down somewhere. 173 stations. They have 173 stations. And their ability to do this goes back to a modification of the 1996 Telecommunications Act, which lifted local limits on radio stations and also apparently is exacerbated by a decision by current federal FCC chairman Ajit Pai. We love Ajit Pai, don't we? So that's a big story. And then there was another article from Slate.com, Public Shaming Won't Stop Sinclair. I'm not surprised. Conservatives have no shame. Let's see. Trump is trashing American companies. Still hasn't trashed Putin, saying that Amazon is using, as opposed to, you know, contracting, doing legitimate business, sort of using, abusing the U.S. Postal Service, which is losing money anyway, and that Amazon is taking advantage of the money-losing U.S. Postal Service. If you have ever followed what's going on with the Postal Service, they're not losing money. They're actually profitable. To the extent that their bookkeeping shows them in the red, it's because Congress forced them to move forward certain pension obligations in a very, very, very accelerated way because, you know, they want to privatize the post office being the only state, the only department that is actually stipulated in the Constitution. Actually, Amazon is great for the Postal Service because they get to do something with all this equipment and infrastructure and person power that they have. So let me just say this is actually an open forum. You can call in with your thoughts, opinions, comments on current events or other stuff. 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738. Apparently, Trump now has gotten us into a trade war. China slaps tariffs on U.S.-produced pork, apples, and more. Quoting from the article in Associated Press, American farmers could have a tougher time selling pork, apples, and other products as China levied new tariffs Monday in retaliation against taxes approved by Donald Trump. Let's see. China Customs Tariff Commission increasing the tariff rate on 8 imported products by 25%, also imposing a new 15% on 120 other commodities, including fruits. I mean, whatever you think about China, whatever you think about how they conduct business, I don't know, maybe you feel like a trade war with China is a good thing. It's I think on balance it's a bad thing because we're really economically, I think, not prepared for it because we import so much from them. But we can talk about it. 713-526-5738. I'm going to do an early station ID so I can get to Greg and not have to cut him off. You're listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm Mike Koenig. Bob Gartner is on controls. And remember, you can support KPFT by going to kpft.org, making a donation, big, small, in between. Anything is appreciated if you can. KPFT.org, click on donate, and hopefully you'll choose this show to donate sort of in response to. You can also follow me at thinkwingradio.com or on Twitter at thinkwingradio. Okay, Greg, you are on the air.
Hey,
thanks,
Mike,
for calling.
I hadn't called you in a while.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you tonight. And you brought up China, and I don't know how many people get Rolling Stone magazine. But if you get the current issue with Jack White on the cover, they have a story about Smithfield. And if you don't know who Smithfield is, if you go to most grocery stores, they're probably the largest producer of pork in the United States.
Didn't China buy them?
Yeah, they did. In fact, that's the point of the story.
Okay.
That the company who bought them, which is called WH, I think that's one of its names, they bought it back in 2013 for $7.1 billion. In the particular county that they're in North Carolina, has issues with some of the major things that this company has done with them. One of them, and one of the pictures you'll see in the story, is these kind of retention ponds. And the retention ponds has basically hog manure in them.
Yeah, waste.
One of the problems with hog manure is the way that it's built. it seeps into the homes and other water areas around people in this county.
So the ponds aren't properly lined, like with clay or whatever, to keep them from leaking?
Yeah, if that. And they've also talked about, in the story, there's an organization you've probably heard of called Reveal. And in fact, after Harvey, they were one of the groups that talked about some of the things that were happening here in Harris County in the Houston area because of the problems with infrastructure. Well, anyway, when they were first trying to buy this company, the chairman of Smithfield at first had very little or no knowledge of the fact that the company that had bought them was basically a proxy company of the Chinese government. And when he was first shown the documents by the people from Reveal, his reaction was, wow, that was the only thing he could say. And they've also bought several other agricultural businesses, not only here in the United States, but around the world, because they look at some parts of agriculture, particularly pork production, and to supply their own people with this as part of national security.
Yes. Well, it's part of American national security, really, to consider our food supply. But the purchase of this company by China was in the interest of their national food security, even though it's located over here.
Yeah. And I really would hope that people do read the story in the current issue of Rolling Stone. How you'll see it is it has a picture of Jack White on the cover. It's like right near the end of the magazine. And you know, I'd ask people a lot of questions about how would we feel about this if we're progressives and if we care about our environment and where our food comes from and who makes it and who's responsible for what happens when we get it.
You know, a lot of these issues, like the one you're raising and many, many others that people don't think about or aren't sort of top of mind in the news, it really comes down to things. Well, what it really comes down to is our balance of payments deficit, which, of course, is exacerbated in large part by our balance of trade deficit. In short, there are a lot more dollars circulating overseas than there are circulating in the United States. And people have to do something with those dollars, so they come back and buy American stuff here. Now, when they buy American products, that's great. Then we end up, you know, maybe developing a smaller trade deficit or trade surplus. But when they start to buy companies, then they're controlling our means of production. When they start to buy farms, they're buying our ability to produce food. Now, granted, you know, the government, it's on our land, the government can exercise a certain amount of control, but the dollars have to go somewhere. Now, we became a creditor nation after the First World War. Up until that time, we were a debtor nation, meaning that we had more foreign money in than we had American money out. We were a creditor nation until Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan turned us back into a debtor nation. In other words, we were able to finance our debts locally, domestically, essentially. And he turned us into a debtor nation where we had so much of our debt overseas and so many dollars going overseas. Now, you have to recycle those dollars, which is why they allow things like the purchase of companies and radio stations and Fox News, which is partly Arab-owned. But we're a debtor nation. And if one day, with all the dollars overseas, we should have a very weak currency. But it's a desirable currency. If it ever became undesirable, we might experience what the British experienced in the 1960s and 70s, when all of a sudden the British pound sterling was not so much a reserve currency, and it took a dump. It went from, I think, like $3 or $3.50 to the pound to less for a while than a dollar to the pound. And that could happen to us. We could suddenly see a crash in the dollar. It won't be slow. If it comes, it'll be quick. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that really we should be thinking about as national policy. There's you know, oil security and material security and food security, but there should also be currency security. We are on a knife edge in currency value. We should not have a dollar as strong as it is, technically speaking.
True. And it's like you said, most Americans don't think about stuff like this. Most folks don't realize what's going on. Or if they do, unless it directly affects them, they don't know how to really quantify it.
Well, it's
really the best way we could explain it is, let's say we were a debtor nation. And we have all these, let's say, treasury bills and other things that are
foreign
part of our deficit spending.
Foreign help.
And we have countries that own it. Like the Chinese are the ones who own a sizable portion
about 10%
of the treasury bills that you hear about when you listen to the report, whether it's on the stock market or treasury bonds or whatever. So they can turn that treasury bond that they own into cash internationally, and they can use their own money
for something else.
Companies that, yeah, for totally something else.
Yeah.
If they want to buy a company in, let's say,
Africa,
Chicago, Illinois,
Africa,
they can.
I mean, they want to invest. They're starting to invest heavily in Africa. What if they decide to take the money, you know, as part of a trade war? What if they decide to take a large chunk of their bond holdings, let them expire, not renew them, and simply invest in maybe minerals mines or factories in Africa, which is an area where they're trying to develop economic and political leverage?
Yeah. And that's what Americans need to ask themselves. Don't worry about, you know, some of the things you've heard President Trump tweet about, or his fight or feud with Amazon. This is much more important, much greater.
It's all part of a piece. It's of a piece. Okay, Greg, I appreciate your calling. I got some other folks I need to get to, but I appreciate your bringing up that topic.
Thank you
very much. Take care. Okay, next up, I'm a little confused. Is it Mark or Tony? Tony. Okay, Tony, you're on the air. Thanks for holding. How you been?
Good, how are you?
Okay, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I wanted to switch the topic from the trade wars to immigration.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard, but they're actually imposing like a quota now for immigration judges to see if they, like, you know.
They have to clear a certain number of cases, which, of course, you know, haste makes waste.
So, I mean, how do you think it'll actually make things better, or do you think it'll make them worse? In my opinion, I think it'll make them worse. I mean, you already have these people traumatized, you know, running away from whatever it is, you know, because I know most of them are asylum seekers. They're, you know, running away from, you know, whether it's economic or political reasons. And they're coming to a country where, you know, they don't know the language, they don't know anybody, and, you know, they have to go through this whole process. By the time they get in front of a judge, they're traumatized and they don't have, you know, any type of representation.
Did you watch John Oliver last night?
No, sorry, I didn't.
If you can, watch John Oliver, or see if you can watch him on YouTube if you don't have HBO, because he actually did a lengthy piece on the immigration courts last night. One of the things he pointed out is that the immigration courts are not under the Justice Department. I'm sorry, they're not under the judicial branch. They are under the executive branch in the Justice Department. So it's like a civil court. You're not entitled to a lawyer like you are in criminal court, and yet these are literally life and death decisions. And if I glanced at the article and understood it correctly, what Trump is proposing is that judges will essentially be graded on how many cases they clear a year, and the number proposed is 700 cases a year. Now, if you think about it, if they worked 7 days a week, that would be about 2 cases a day. But, of course, it's more like 3 or 4 cases a day because they don't work 7 days a week, and they don't even work banker's hours in most cases. So how much justice? You know, there's an old expression, justice delayed is justice denied. But there's also, I think, a corollary to that, justice too quick is justice denied. They have children, according to the report from John Oliver, they have children as young as 2, 3, 4 years old who are in immigration court and don't have lawyers and are supposed to defend themselves. I mean, it's a joke. It's a joke and it's a crime.
Yep.
Figurative crime. If you believe in justice, whether you feel that immigration is too loose, whether you feel that we need to be more open about it, whatever your feelings about immigration are, you should be concerned about the justice and how it is dealt out when these people go to an immigration court. Justice should matter.
Which leads me to my next topic. I don't know if you've seen President Trump's tweets. He keeps talking about this caravan. It's only 1,100 people, and I know for a fact that he's going to turn away most of them, if not all of them.
I did not see that story. I'm sorry. So sum it up.
Basically, there's this group of 1,100 people. Most of them are Central American. They're like from Honduras. And there's this BuzzFeed reporter, actually, that he's going on the journey with them from Honduras, you know, all throughout Central America and Mexico. And they're trying to, most of them are asylum seekers, and they're trying to get to the border, you know, so they can apply for asylum. And that's the caravan he keeps referring to. And now he's using that, you know, basically as a scapegoat, saying, you know, the DACA program is dead. I want to enforce the immigration laws, you know, tougher laws. Congress Act now, you know, all the stuff he's been saying for the past, you know, 1.5 years.
Well, you know, the thing about Trump, and unfortunately not everybody understands it, is he's a liar, and he's also sort of an evil person. You know, if evil is a lack of empathy, which is one definition, he's an evil man. He has no empathy. He doesn't care about the truth of what he says. And, you know, there was a guest on Bill Maher the other week, and I think it was Bill Maher. No, actually, it was Lawrence O'Donnell, and she was in a state of, I think, actual depression. It was kind of visible in her body language. She feels that Trump is slowly staging a coup d'etat to take over the government, putting in incompetent people that are friends, relatives, loyal to him instead of the Constitution, kleptocrats. Yeah, we are in a serious moment in history, and Congress is not doing its job because it's a unified government under one party. It's a really it's a terrifying time to be an American. Okay, anything else, or you want to wrap it up?
No, that was it. You know, I love your show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. I always appreciate hearing that. Thank you. Take care.
You too.
Okay, next up is Mark. Mark, you're on the air. How you doing?
Yeah, China has talked about launching a yen-based oil futures contract or a gold-backed oil futures contract. That's going to do havoc to the U.S. dollar because the U.S. dollar is backed by oil.
The Chinese have been trying for a long time to make the Chinese yen, or the RMB, as they often call it, into a reserve currency to rival the U.S. dollar. And, yes, you're absolutely correct. If demand for the U.S.
There's no doubt about it.
Oh, they've been trying for 20 years. But if that's ever accomplished to a significant degree, then demand for the U.S. dollars as a reserve currency will decline, and all of a sudden we'll have a dollar crash.
Exactly. But anyway, what I wanted to talk about, you were talking about the Postal Service.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I've talked to you about this before, but it's within their charter. They can do banking. They did banking before, and not like serious Chase Manhattan banking, but, you know, just open a small dollar savings account. And they can do that, and I think that would be a great asset to the United States. And I, like I say, I don't think it was you I talked to about this before, but someone said, well, if they do that, people are going to rob the post office, and what are you going to do about that? Well, the post office has its own police force.
And it has its own security measures. I mean, they already have security against stuff that is valuable.
Right. I mean, they could arm up their police force if they really wanted to, and I don't think anyone would go rob a post office for a $100 checking account anyway.
Well, you put in the kinds of security issues that banks have. You know, you put up teller windows and, six-inch plexiglass or whatever it is they do.
Right.
One of the big advantages to something like the Postal Service doing banking, there is an enormous underclass of Americans who are what they call underbanked.
Exactly.
So they go to these check cashing services that basically take a fraction of their paycheck just for the privilege of getting their own money. If these people had some kind of bank account, they could do online bill payments, they would save postage, they would be able to deposit their checks and not lose money. It's literally a Sheriff of Nottingham policy that we are robbing the poor
right.
by having check cashing and usury for underbanked
right.
people. Yeah, I'm completely in agreement with you.
Yeah, I don't want to say what kind of industry I am, but I do have sophisticated software that pulls in the census data, and I map stuff. So, you know, I map things all around the country. And there's no banks in areas of the country where a lot of those people that need these kinds of checking services are. The only thing there are exactly what you said, are those check cashing places that I think the usury that they charge is almost like a loan shark. So
yes.
the post office is in every zip code in the country.
Yes.
So they're in all those underserved areas, and they could be a huge benefit to the people that live there. That's my two cents. I'm letting you go.
I appreciate that, Mark. Thank you for bringing up that topic. Great topic. Take care.
All right.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement. Underbanking is a huge issue. Poor people being taken advantage of because they can't make minimum deposits. They maybe don't get direct deposit from their employers. If I could ever get a guest who could speak authoritatively on underbanking, I would absolutely do a show on that. I've kept my eyes peeled, but I haven't really found anybody. But yeah, that's it. An incredibly important topic that significantly impacts a huge segment of the American population. And again, it is not top of mind because it is not top of news. So, that's that. All right, I'm going to do a quick station ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Bob Gartner's on controls. You can support KPFT by going to kpft.org. We are a community-supported radio station. So, anything that you contribute, whether it's a small money donation, a big money donation, you can come by the station with cash. You can
Come by and join the building committee.
Yes, you can join and be like physically active.
Sticky tape on the front steps and a host of other activities.
Yeah, we can always use.
I'm going to borrow an email address for that. Send your information to Bobby at kpft.org.
Oh, is Bobby doing that stuff now?
He and I are sort of co-chairs.
Ah. Well, also remember, if you like a show, like Mark seems to appreciate what I do, if you like shows on KPFT, a great way to support the station if you can't do it with money, tell your friends. Tell them there's stuff they might want to sample that you enjoy listening to. And that also, in its way, helps us. Okay, next up is it Jerry? No, it's Wayne. Wayne, okay, you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Okay, so what's up?
It's a great topic what you're talking about, especially the post office.
Yep.
Where it is that the Congress has been for the last, I guess, 10 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Been trying to override the power of the post office and their business.
They've been trying to bankrupt it.
Yeah, I think that I'm not for sure, but I think that if there's a post office, you know, that they could quite possibly use something like an already maybe they could just like. Commandeer, because maybe it's something like that that's in the Constitution, that's in that same vicinity where the post office is as a bank.
Oh,
they
yes.
could just go and put their name on that bank. Say it was closed down. Say it was a building not being occupied. And then they wanted to open up a postal bank there and just put the United States Post Office on it. Couldn't they do that?
I don't know the law, but it has been my impression that there's nothing stopping them except politics.
Mm.
So, yeah, I really need to do a little more research in this. I've heard it sort of off and on. It comes up, you know, in like the middle of a website or something. Yeah, I need to look up in the Constitution where the post office is defined, how it's defined. And God, I would love to get an authoritative guest on this.
I would love for you to do that too, but not. Please let's make it more than an hour show. I'd be willing to donate something to that to just get some good information on that.
Well,
so that people can learn their Constitution, because I don't think it's a lot of people around here understand their Constitution, Mike.
No, and a lot of them are conservatives, but many of them are just poor people. They don't understand the Constitution. They don't understand their rights under the Constitution. They don't understand how they're being screwed by being denied their constitutional rights, whether expressed or implied. Voting makes a difference. When you vote, you become a constituent, and all of a sudden they pay a little bit more attention to you. So the underclass has to vote. The underbanked have to vote. The poor people have to vote. You have to vote.
And I want to just touch on something. I don't see why the teachers of Texas here haven't decided to walk out. I'm looking at Kentucky, Oklahoma, mm-hmm. where there are a bunch of conservatives that call themselves conservatives that's beginning to understand that conservatism means poorism.
Means what?
Poorism.
I can't understand the word. Spell it.
Okay, let me hold the phone a little close. Conservatism.
Yes.
Means poorism, as in poor people.
Oh, poorism. Poorism. I haven't heard that. That's an interesting word.
Yeah, it is. Let's look it up and use it more. Conservatism means poorism. When you take from yourself or deny yourself, you are hurting your own self. And that what goes back to what you just said, voting.
Yeah. And you have to vote your interests and not against your interests, which mostly means voting progressives. Yeah, go ahead.
And that's what conservatism does. It entices you to vote against your own self-interest.
Yes.
It basically entices you to vote against your own self-interest.
Yes.
Unions got to do a better job of what they're doing, and I commend these teachers now, and I need to see more of union people speaking out, not just teachers. I'm talking about city government, where the people are federal employees. Pay raises and stuff like this. It's all going to have to start coming together to stop Trump.
Unions are not without their flaws, but they are essential as an important part of what I call the societal triad of government, business, and labor.
Union is like government. Government works when people make it work. Union works when the people that's in that union make it work.
Yes.
But you can't sit idly by. You can't sit idly by as we do in voting and assume that somebody else is going to take care of it. These young people that's out there in Florida and all around the country now are starting to understand that. But we need to teach them. We need to teach them that don't follow the conservative laws or the conservative ways, because that's not going to get them to where they want to be.
I was telling my wife last night, especially this kid David Hogg, but also some of the others, I hope I live long enough to see what their lives turn into.
Him get elected to something.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and some of the others. I'm hoping.
I like the little kid. I think he's got chutzpah. And I can't say what I really think he got, but I think a 17-year-old man, like young man like that.
Amazing.
Growing into a man.
It's like a prodigy. He's like a prodigy.
Yeah. If he gets the right leadership and his father's a strong man and his parents are good people. I see a young man going places we don't even know about right now.
It's going to be a very exciting time, God willing.
Yeah. I'm going to let you go now
okay.
So you can talk to somebody else.
Thanks for calling, Wayne. Appreciate it.
All right.
You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM. You can follow my website, thinkwingradio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Think Wing Radio. And next up is Jerry?
No. Tony.
Yeah, Tony. I thought Jerry was on for like 23 minutes. I thought he was going to be up next. But we got you. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm not very good. I'm just afraid now. I mean, my goodness. I mean, we've got a trade war with the Chinese. So what are they going to do to us? We won't be able to get, I mean, we can't export our apples. I mean, you know, we can't drink that much apple juice in America. And suppose they put a tariff on other things that we just can't make or grow here in the United States. And then, of course, we got these immigrants coming toward our country, and we don't know what to do. I mean, my God, I wish I had built a bomb shelter so we can all just go into it and hope that the Chinese and the immigrants don't just take us over and hope they don't treat us badly.
Well, there are still some old homes around that have bomb shelters. You might look.
Well,
into
I mean,
it.
We all need to get one because I mean, look, the country's under attack.
The country
we just
is
don't know
under
what to
attack.
Do.
And isn't it ironic that Trump is criticizing Amazon and the post office and still hasn't said a bad word about Putin?
Well, I mean, like I said, I mean, we got the Russians, who we all love, but they were our friends, even though they're communists, but that's okay. We love those. And then we've got the communist Chinese, even though they're atheists and don't believe in any god except the state. But we love them because we want all the cheap stuff they give to us because we can't make them in this country anymore. We don't know how to do it. And then what's going to happen to us when all these people come to our border and say, we demand you let us in? I mean, I got rooms in my house that I'll be happy to put people in free and feed them and everything as long as they treat me nice because I'm so afraid.
Well, we need people to...
Well, America used to be a strong place, but now we're all just afraid of the Chinese and the Russians and the immigrants. Boy, it's a good thing this isn't the Second World War when Germany was invading the country. We'd probably be speaking, well, we probably wouldn't be here because God only knows what would happen.
Yeah.
But we weren't afraid of them. But now we're just so afraid of everybody, Mike.
We are a debtor nation. We have allowed a lot of our industry to move overseas.
Well, gee, I mean, we've allowed it, but do you think maybe we ought to be able to make a toaster in America again? I know we might have somebody that can make a toaster or build a TV because we used to do it.
I'm totally
you know,
with
but
you.
We don't know how anymore. We're just so scared and we don't know what to do.
Either you're really on the verge of tears or you're a terrific actor. Which is it?
Well, I mean, I've been listening to your show when you first came on and you talked about a war, a trade war.
Yep.
I mean, war means somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah, people get hurt in trade
wars. If I can't get to Walmart and buy that cheap Chinese stuff, what am I going to do?
Well, you know, the premise behind tariffs is to support domestic production. I mean, that's the theory. And, you know, sometimes over time, it can be a beneficial thing if you can increase domestic productivity.
I mean, Mike, you're a smart guy. You got great words. You can talk all of that intellectual stuff. All I know is when I was a kid back in the olden days before electricity, we used to build things here in the United States. I mean, we had Motorola TVs. They were built here in the United States. We had one when I was a kid. They worked pretty good.
Yep.
And we used to have a car. It was made in Detroit.
American,
and we used to have...
American built was...
We used to have a lot of things made in the United States. We had steel.
American built
was
the...
Buildings.
American built products...
We can't get steel from China. We're going to live in huts again in caves.
Well, we do make steel. The question is, what percentage of the steel we need is made domestically? I mean, American made used to be the envy of the world.
That's right. We used to, but now we're all such wuss and we're so afraid and we don't want anybody to beat us up and we want everybody to treat us nice. So we're so scared now. What are we going to do, Mike?
Well, we have to get rid of Trump, and then we go from there.
Well, I mean, but how is it gonna make us feel good today? I mean, you said a Chinese trade war. Didn't you just say that?
Yes, I did.
I mean, my God, what does that mean? I'm not going to be able to buy my cheap Walmart stuff? How can we live in America without that stuff?
Well, some of that stuff will get more expensive.
I mean,
made
I only
here.
Got five TVs in my house. Suppose I need another one, my God.
Okay, now
what am I going to do, Mike?
Yeah.
You're laughing, and I'm serious.
Well, it sounds like you're pulling my leg.
This is how it sounded to me a few moments ago. Everybody's crying about China. You know what? Forget China. They're not going to give up the largest consumer market on the planet besides theirs to invest in minerals in Africa.
You'd be surprised.
Let me tell you something. Tomorrow, anybody can go to Walmart and buy any much cheap Chinese crap as they want to. It's not going to change. Cheap T-shirts made in China, everything. It's not going to change.
Time will tell.
Well, Yeah, time will tell. I'm 62. How long is it going to be, Mike?
I don't know. I'm 67. You tell me.
Okay. I mean, come on. Give me a break. We used to make everything in America. Nobody made a problem with it. We used to make things in America. Now all the factories are overseas, and now we're crying, or some people on your show is crying, that if we don't appease the communist, godless, atheist Chinese, we can't get their cheap crap in the United States anymore.
Well, the problem is that a lot of our manufacturing facilities no longer exist as an alternative.
If we bring them back in the United States, we've got people here that can make a TV.
Yes,
we still have people who can make a TV in the United States.
But those
what
things,
the problem?
But moving those kinds of facilities or building them takes time. That's why will tell.
Give me a break. You know what? You act like it takes 100 years to build a factory.
No.
There's lots of buildings in America that you can convert to a factory. In the Second World War, they didn't have 98% of the infrastructure that we have in modern America in 2018. And in 6 months, Ford Motor Company converted their entire assembly line commercial manufacturing to military warplanes.
That's true.
Come on, give me a break, Mike.
Well, I think, if I may say, we're sort of mixing apples and oranges here.
Oh,
which is
sure
kind of
we are. Yeah, you're right.
Well,
we can't get those from China because they might not sell them to us.
No, the problem there is they may not buy them from us, which makes the value of the dollar less.
Well, guess what? There's an entire planet out there that might want to buy some apples and oranges from the United States.
Well, like you said, China's one of the largest markets in the world. Just
but they're
like
not
they're,
the only market in the
no,
world.
No, but just like they're afraid of losing us, I think they are. I think we're afraid of losing
I
them.
I believe they are. Really, they are. Because guess what? They got a billion people to satisfy.
But they don't have the money that Americans have per capita.
No, they don't, which is another reason why they want to keep them satisfied.
Right.
They cannot win a trade war because they have less money.
I'll tell you, Tony, I apologize. I got five other people waiting.
No, you go right ahead. I know how your program works. When I'm a guy that wants to stand up for things.
Hey.
Get those other stoners on there who's starting to cry.
You've had
them to wet their pants.
You've had 7 minutes,
Thank
which
you.
Is actually a lot.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Okay, listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. And, Jerry, you are on.
Yeah, the problem with the last caller is it's about, 1,000 times more complicated than he just discussed.
I would agree.
At first, I thought it was funny. At first, I didn't realize he was being facetious, but there's a certain point beyond which it just becomes ridiculous. It's worth noting that the United States was the number one manufacturing economy in the world until just a few years ago. They've only eclipsed us in the last few years there in China.
Manufacturing what?
In general.
Big ticket items like airplanes and motor vehicles.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Like that. But, I mean, the small stuff, for example, a lot of our, I would say even most of our computer memory chips are made overseas. Most of our circuit boards are made overseas.
Right.
I think that the CPUs are still built here, but, some of that is also being built overseas.
The big $64 question is, and this is the thing, you have labor that's working at a certain level that expects a certain amount of pay for some kind of skilled labor. And all that. And there's times when you can do that, when you can sit there and, you can make things so productive if you arrange things right. A big part of this has to do with private business in this country not running its business right.
Well, business has no nationalism. Business is about bucks.
Well, that's true, but that's something that, basically another thing that guy doesn't bring up is that, of course, we created all the rules. The rules of the international system, the international financial and economic system,
We made them to benefit everyone and especially us. And now, for some reason, we have somebody in power who thinks dismantling that system is a good idea.
Yeah.
Which is nuts.
The way it looks, anyway. And that's just like, you just can't operate like that. I've actually studied up on that manufacturing issue and all that, and there's a whole bunch of very practical problems that stand in the way of all that stuff. Plus, we actually have World Trade. We have the World Trade Organization. We keep trying to get everybody to you know, cut their, you know, subsidies for this, that, and the other, particularly agricultural products. But, of course, we've maintained, we're the most productive country in the world probably agriculturally now.
That is true.
But we've maintained our, a bunch of our subsidies and all that. That guy just, you know, for a minute it was funny then, it was irritating. And it was really kind of pointless after that. But, you know, but if you're going to, you know, if you're worried about this stuff, read a book called When Globalization Fails. It's a really good book. I read it a couple, two or three years ago and everything. It's the reason, it goes into the reasons why we decided to do things the way we did them at the end of World War II and after.
Yeah, people have to understand that essentially we have been an economic imperialist power. We are the modern, we have been essentially in many ways the modern Rome. I think we've been a little nicer about sort of sharing it around, but there's a reason why we became the center of the world, the center of the so-called free world. There's a reason for that, and it's because we won the Second World War and designed a system that did it. And now we have Trump and his cronies who are willfully dismantling that, which is going to make us, in a great many ways, many unforeseeable, a much poorer country.
Yeah. Well, and it's also going to basically put us into a much more dangerous situation vis-a-vis issues like war and all that. That's one of the problems that, you know, Germany, Japan, when they went to war, what did they go to war over? One of the key things was things like oil and steel.
Yes. Yeah.
And,
well, Japan, certainly.
Resources.
Japan was totally natural resources.
And, yeah, and all that. There's only a handful of company countries that could possibly do, go on their own. We're one of those few. But we decided not to do that for a range of very good reasons.
It would take, even under a mobilized system, it would take several years for us to redevelop the kinds of diverse...
Oh, no, it would take longer than that. It would take decades.
Well, I mean, if the will was there... If it was like a national emergency.
Oh, if it was an actual national, if it was like a national emergency, yeah.
Okay.
I'll give you the case study of that, in fact, that he didn't give you, which is rare earth minerals.
Yes, rare earths is another topic. Jerry, I have four other people.
Yeah, let me let you go. I know you got other people. I'll talk to you later.
I appreciate you calling. Thank you. Take care. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM. Bob Gartner's on controls, and KPFT.org is how you support this community-supported station, Free Speech Radio. M.O.D., you are on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You're running through. It's good. Everyone gets to talk, Mike.
I try to get everybody on up to a certain point in the show.
Hey, you're doing a good job. Well, thanks again, as always. We stood up Mao, and he ran about, what, 1949 to, you know, the early 70s.
Yeah, maybe mid.
And so that's when Kissinger, I said several times, I hope people listen, that when Kissinger and Nixon had him Mao sandwich, Mao was in the middle, and they were kissing him, saying, good job, well done, and saying, you will become the world's
Mao was doctor. The meat, and they were the bread slices.
Yeah, no, that's... They went over there.
Yeah, it's an image.
Yeah, well, picture. There is the picture. Mm. And, you know, they're rubbing them and saying, good job.
Mm.
But, to the one thing about crying about China, well, he's sort of right, but at the same time, that's above his pay grade because he doesn't understand that it's already decided. You're right. Transnational corporations run the show.
Yep.
Our government, you know, is...
We're almost at rollerball territory.
Where our government's run by transnational corporations. China started out as their corporations run by the communist China. So the endpoint's called corporate fascism.
Mm.
And mostly said when you can't stick a rolling cigarette paper between the state and media, you have corporate fascism. So it's, you know, this was created. Mao came up to the ranks, and we brought them down, and they are the new sub-middle class manufacturer, billion people, willing to work, and so jobs will come back here. Trump has to do some stuff first. He has to finish privatizing a lot of agencies. Like next would be what, VA? So when he finishes doing his job, he's the closer, and when we're basically dead, blank, broke, which we are, those hard assets, those T-bonds that China already cashed in over $1 trillion, 1.38 already. There's a little bit left, but they're coming back. They don't have to do quantitative easing. They do quantitative tightening.
I don't think that the Chinese cashed in $1.3 trillion. The number I've heard is they hold $1.3 trillion. The danger is that they won't renew them as they come up.
No, no. They're cashing in by quantitative tightening, meaning they're acquiring U.S. hard assets like Shipley Donuts this morning by the O'Reillys that took the day off. They own the businesses. They own the ocean front. They own the bay.
We're a debtor nation.
They're doing is acquiring hard assets.
Yep.
And so the fear, no, they're coming in and they're acquiring, getting rid of their U.S. toxic debt. And yes, that was decided a long time ago to move manufacturing over to after Mao did the job of what they sent him to do.
Started in the 70s.
Yeah, that 1972 on that envoy. But
the movement of American industry overseas, particularly to China, it started in the 1970s.
That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
they brought Mao up.
We're mostly in agreement. I was mostly in agreement with Tony.
I'm sorry?
We're mostly in agreement. I was mostly in agreement with Tony.
Well, you just don't need to make the result. You need to look at the cause. And if transnational corporations run this republic, and China, they have investment interests. And so jobs will come back, but we have to finish breaking the labor representation. And so anyway, Mike, appreciate you.
I appreciate you calling, and I appreciate you letting me get to my last couple of people.
Yes, sir.
You take care. Okay, next up is Brad. Brad, you're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
Yes. People like you always want to blame things on Ronald Reagan.
Well, yeah.
But... Democrats in control of Congress, especially the House of Representatives back then?
Well, that is true to a point.
You.
Oh, you don't want to listen?
No, I'm just trying to tell you. And
okay.
I want to say, what is so bad about being a creator nation since majority
a debtor nation. Debtor.
Great Britain's a debtor nation. They're in the G7. France is a debtor nation, G7. Italy's a debtor nation. Okay, why is being... That's only one thing, because... Japan is the world's largest creditor nation, yet Japan's had a not that great of economy the past 20 years.
I don't know. Yeah, I guess they're a creditor nation. But
are considered the when you talk about debtor nation, creditor nation, you have to also add in the assets that they've invested in other countries.
Oh,
okay?
Yes, that's true.
All right. But a lot of countries like China is a creditor nation, yet they have massive amounts of federal debt. Okay, there's a lot of countries that are supposedly, they're creditor nations, but they have lots of debt.
Yeah, actually, China is a very interesting case because, on the one hand, you're right, they have an enormous amount of resources in terms of foreign currency. On the other hand, they've been borrowing a great deal of money for infrastructure and also to keep the economy running at a time when they're probably looking at, in the future, at a demographic crash. They're going to be in a very tricky situation within the next few years. It's going to be really, really intriguing.
So, again, what is so bad about being a creditor nation?
You mean a debtor nation?
Or both things. Because, again, Japan's the world's largest creditor nation, and their economy has sort of been stagnant the past generation.
Well, being a creditor nation, aside from the fact it gives you more independence on the world scene, it also means that you have more control over the world scene. When you're a debtor nation, other countries control your means of production. Other countries can manipulate your currency more readily. We are a debtor nation. We have more trillions of dollars overseas than in the United States. I apologize, Brad. I got one more guy I got to get to. I've only got two more minutes.
Thank you.
I appreciate it, Brad. Thank you. Okay, Johnny, you're on the air. You're going to be the last guy.
Okay, I won't need but less than a minute.
Okay.
Contrary to what Tony would have us believe, liberals and progressives and Democrats are not the ones that are running scared, running around, screaming about phantoms, whether it's this make-believe story about China or Russia. Oh, I'm angry like those college and high school students. I'm angry at Republicans for the way they're running this country into the ground on actual tangible things. Like finances. Remember last week I was all over the map on terms of how they're constantly been scamming and stealing from us publicly and privately since the mid-1975?
I don't remember that specifically.
Okay, well, I just got off the computer. and I counted over two dozen scandals just in the year from 2001 through 2004, I believe. I mean, the list is unbelievable. It's so angering. Anger is the adjective I would use.
Yeah, I
not
agree.
Fear. That's the Republican mindset.
I think there's a lot of
brain.
I think there's a lot of I think there's a lot of anxiety. You can call that fear, but I think a lot of people have just a lot of anxiety about the sudden turn.
People who are losing their DACA status. Tony, you're barking up the wrong tree. Quit hating liberals. Join with us and help us defeat the Republicans. Have a good night.
You too. All right. Thanks for calling, Johnny. All right. Well, this leaves me a minute. Okay. Where do I want to go in the minute? Last week, I think we talked about ICE, immigration and customs enforcement, that they've been deporting military veterans. We're a great country. There was an article last week by Josh Rogan titled "The United States is Finally Confronting China's Economic Aggression." I want to spend just a few seconds on that. Being in a position where I've learned a little about Chinese culture that maybe is a little less known or talked about, my impression is that one of the reasons, maybe a main reason, that China doesn't respect patents so much is there is no tradition in China of public information being untouchable by other companies. You can have secret proprietary information, recipes, engineering plans, whatever. But the Chinese have a culture that if it's out there, you can use it. So what we're trying to do by enforcing intellectual property rights is literally getting them to change their entire culture. Okay, I've got about 30 seconds left. So thank you very much for listening. I'll look forward to speaking with you all next week. And I guess a random quote for the day. Remember always that all of us, you and I especially, are descended from immigrants and revolutionists. That's from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Remarks to the Daughters of the American Revolution, April 21st, 1938. I like that quote, and this is good timing for it. Y'all have a great week. I'll speak to you next Monday.
Hi, Juan Flores here, inviting you to listen in to Jazz Latino here every Tuesday at noon with the absolute best of Afro-Cuban Latin jazz. 2 hours of great music. Hope you can join me Tuesday at noon right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston.
If you would like to get involved with producing radio for KPFT, consider coming out for the first Saturday Skillshare, 10 a.m. the first Saturday of the month. We'll take 2 hours to teach anyone who attends how to mix radio on a soundboard and basic editing using KPFT's recording studio. If you've got something to teach, get in touch to offer to share your skills as well. You can email me at patrick@kpft.org or just drop in on the first Saturday of the month at 10 a.m. See y'all there.
By joining KPFT's Sustainer program this hour, you can support your local non-commercial station and help KPFT reduce its pledge drives. Rather than giving a yearly gift, Sustainers give a monthly donation that continues as long as you want. Giving 5, 20, 100, or more monthly helps change the way KPFT works. Sustainers help us meet our operating expenses without days and days of on-air fundraising. That means less pledge drive, more efficiency, and greater stability for KPFT, regardless of the time of year. Again, visit KPFT.org to make a difference today. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, KPFT.org worldwide.